I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. According to the Georgetown University Center on Education and the Workforce, by the year 2020, a high school diploma will be enough education for only about a third of all the jobs out there. The remaining two-thirds will require an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, or even more. And this forecast folds into a bigger discussion in America today, whether our higher education system is properly preparing students for the jobs of the future. Surveys show a lot of cynicism on this question, especially among those doing the hiring. Only about 10% of business leaders surveyed by Gallup believe today's college graduates have what's needed for the workforce. Today in The Exchange, we wrap up our higher education series, A Matter of Degrees, with a look at career readiness. Let's hear from you. Do you think colleges are doing a good enough job helping students become career ready? If not, where lies the problem? Are we teaching them the wrong subjects? Does the material need to be harder? Or does the whole college experience need to be rethought? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. With us in studio is Crystal Hicks, Associate Director of the UNH Career Center. Crystal, welcome back. Good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Burton Kirkwood, Academic Dean at Colby Sawyer College, Professor of Social Sciences and Education there. And Burton Kirkwood, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Frank Meyer, longtime Director of Admissions at NHTI, Concord's Community College, and the largest community college in the state. And Frank Meyer, thank you also.
Thank you.
And also with us, Fred Coker. He's trustee of the New Hampshire High Tech Council, co-founder of the New Hampshire Coalition for Business and Education, as well as founder and president of Coker & Company, a marketing and communications firm. And Fred, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Nice to be here.
Well, and Fred, I want to start with you in that role as head of the Coalition for Business and Education. What are you hearing from New Hampshire employers about whether new graduates are indeed career ready?
We are a group about a one-year-old, and we are listening to presentations from groups around New Hampshire on innovative initiatives to improve education in the state. We are a coalition of college presidents, business CEOs, some legislators, some heads of nonprofits, and our whole goal is to advocate for initiatives that will improve education. And what we have heard to date is exactly what you just reported in your opening, that there's a lack of skills when employers are interviewing potential employees, especially in math and critical thinking. Those two areas pop up all the time. I sat in a room recently with a group of CEOs of manufacturing companies, and all I heard was math, 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 math. That is a huge deficit in the employees that they're interviewing. And I think the critical skills of teamwork and critical thinking, called the soft skills, if you will, and just showing up for work on time. Those are all important to employers, and employers are saying we need people who will come to us on time, be able to think critically, and be able to work as a team. And they're finding that perhaps out of five potential employees, three lack those skills.
Wow. That's not a good ratio.
Not a good ratio.
Well, how about you, Frank Meyer? Again, you're at New Hampshire Technical Institute, NHTI, the community college, as it's called now. What are you hearing from the companies that NHTI works with?
Well, I think we're hearing the same thing as Fred reported. But in a community college, what we do is give students some real-life experience as part of their education. So all of our programs have internships, practicums, laboratory, clinical experiences, so that the students, when they go into the job market, they know exactly what the employer is going to be looking for. Community colleges have another mission, and that's to allow our graduates to transfer their credits into a baccalaureate institution.
That four-year degree.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a 2+2 type of arrangement. But the neat thing about a community college is that you get students with a wide variety of backgrounds. Students who already have master's degrees and are coming to fulfill a long-time ambition to be a nurse or a dental hygienist. We have people who have never been to high school. Maybe they have a high school equivalency. Maybe they've been homeschooled, or maybe they've been number one in their class. So our goal is to provide all these folks with those marketable skills that employers are looking for.
When employers make this critique that Fred mentions and that I mentioned in the open, what do you think, Frank? Are they talking more about that classic sort of four-year higher education degree? Or are they also talking about your graduates, you know, the folks with the two-year degrees?
Well, we hope they're not talking about our graduates, but because we do try very hard to prepare them for the job market. All of our department heads have maintained strong relations with their counterparts in industry. And most of our faculty members have come from their professional peers. They have a lot of experience both academically and employment-wise. So I hope they're not talking about our graduates when they're talking about students who are unprepared for the job market.
Well, we'll definitely dig into that a little bit later. But Burton Kirkwood, I want to bring you into this. It's easy to blame sort of classic liberal arts, higher education for churning out very smart graduates who don't know what to do once they hit the workforce. What do you think about all this?
Well, I think that's certainly been part of the argument. I wouldn't agree with that on a personal or professional level. I think certainly, as Frank mentioned, at Colby Sawyer, we have internships. That's something that's required. We have, in that process, they engage in preparation of their cover letter, their resume. They go through mock interviews. That's just to get the internship. And then they intern, and where they have a chance to work with an employer to engage in various things they've learned in the classrooms, but then gain that practical experience. And what we're really hoping is that practical experience can engage what they've learned in the classrooms, and then they've got the chance to see whether or not this is what they want to do. I think that's a terrific chance for students. I often tell our students sometimes that no, in the sense of learning this is not what you want to do, is a good step in the process. And so that's what we're seeing at our institution. All of our graduates have to have an internship before they leave Colby Sawyer College, and we think that's an integral opportunity to gain those skills that they can use in the workplace.
What do you think about these surveys, including the one by Gallup? 10% of business leaders surveyed believe today's college graduates have what's needed for the workforce. And yet, you know, here you are doing your best to give them that practical real-world experience. Are the employers being a little too grumpy here, a little too picky? What do you think?
I don't know. I will cite a report by AACNU about 5 years ago in which employers and employees were surveyed on the skills that both agreed were necessary for the workforce. The new employees, recent graduates, gave themselves relatively low scores. They said they were weak in certain areas. Employers said they were weak, but at a higher score. In other words, they saw certain areas in which they could have areas of improvement. Employers just saw it as that they were not as well prepared as the new employees saw themselves. So it's an interesting argument. I think that we see a lot of folks saying, well, they're not as well prepared as they think. But in fact, some of the evidence suggests that it's almost a generational difference of what the employers are seeing, kind of like our parents saying we weren't as good in high school or college as they went through.
Are you saying older generations complain about younger generations? What a shocking thing.
I've heard that said.
Well, Krista, a little bit of a different question for you. You're working with students at the UNH Career Center. What disconnects do you see, Krista, between student expectations and job market realities?
I think the expectation with students is I'm going to go through this program, I'm going to get a 4.0 GPA, and I'm going to walk out of here and have a job. I'm going to have employers lined up around the block, just can't wait to hire me. And we really try to not only educate them on the expectations of employers, but also just realistically, that's just not how things work. The other part of it is really instilling in them a sense of accountability and responsibility from day one in their program. And we talk to them during freshman orientation and with parents there and everything and say, look, you can go through your program and you can be top of your class. You can be, you know, the 4.0 GPA, you know your stuff in philosophy or mechanical engineering or whatever your major is. But if you don't understand how to market yourself in an interview, if you don't understand how to properly market yourself on paper and a resume or on LinkedIn, you can't compete because you're always going to be up against those other 4.0s from the MITs and the Colby Sawyers and all the other schools. they have to understand how to compete. So it is about doing the internships. It is about, you know, going and finding the job shadows and being able to see what the real world is like. But if they're not coming into career services, they might completely miss the boat on that entire skill set, because that is not – job hunting is not a skill set you typically learn in a classroom. It's something that they have to actually come and seek out.
All right. The number for you to join us here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're wrapping up our higher education series, A Matter of Degrees, with a look at what does it mean to be career ready. Let's hear from you. Do you think our institutions of higher education are doing enough to help students become career ready? If not, where lies the problem? Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Crystal, I'm going to turn back to you, but hear from everybody. So what makes a difference? You're starting to hit on it. You know, everybody here has talked already about practical experience, job shadowing, internships. You talked about understanding just what it means to job hunt. What else makes a difference, though, in terms of making a student career ready?
I think students understanding the expectations of the recruiters and the employers and really taking themselves out of, you know, I run a blog for UNH for the Career Center, and what the last article was, you know, if you want the job, think like a recruiter, not like a job hunter. You know, so you have to kind of remove yourself from that identity box of I'm the psychology major that wants the job. You have to start thinking, okay, I'm the human services organization that wants the case manager. And how do you bridge that gap? So we're trying to get them to think about this entire process from a totally different standpoint, which might be the first time they've ever done this. So the sooner we can get them in our offices, you know, freshman year, sophomore year, we have so much more time to work with them and prep them on that whole presentation and how to start thinking like that. And it's really made an incredible difference in even the feedback we get from employers, and especially at the career fairs. We've just had a spike in satisfaction levels from the employers and what they've been seeing.
Wow, freshman year. I don't think I was thinking about jobs at freshman year. I was trying to figure out, you know, where the library was.
We love freshmen.
I will ask all of you that question as well. What makes a difference in terms of helping students become career ready? Is it the coursework? Is it something else that some of you have mentioned? The phone number for you to join us with your thoughts is 1-800-892-6477. More in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. It's 919. Good morning. Make sure your membership gift to NHPR goes as far as it can with our corporate match program. Many businesses around the state match their employees' donations to NHPR. You can essentially double the impact of your membership gift. Find out if your company participates at nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from the Derryfield School, inspiring students in grades 6 through 12 to excel in school, college, and beyond. Enrolling now for summer programs at derryfield.org/summer. And from Manchester Choral Society and Orchestra, performing Ernest Bloch's masterwork Sacred Service on May 10th at 7 p.m. at St. Joseph Cathedral in Manchester. Details at mcsnh.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're continuing NHPR's series on higher education, A Matter of Degrees, with a look at what college graduates need to be career ready. Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. All one word. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. And just before the break, I was asking Crystal Hicks at the UNH Career Center what it really takes to make someone career ready, to help them do that. And I want to ask all of you as well, Fred Coker, what do you think, beyond sort of the internships and the job shadowing that we've talked about, what else does it take?
It starts early. It starts in grade school.
In grade school.
There's a move in New Hampshire, and I got to give credit to education leaders in this state, to move toward what we call student-centered learning, where students, yes, they have classroom work, but they also go outside the classroom into the community and engage with groups and businesses at an early age to find out what the real world is like, so that the rigor in the classroom is tied to relevance in the outside community. And that kind of combination of rigor and relevance through the entire education process from grade school all the way through college will help, and this is the theory, will help students be more work-ready when they graduate from college.
That's interesting. So Crystal talked about getting freshmen in the door at the UNH mm-hmm. Career Center, and you're going even further back.
There's a group, and we met in Manchester last night, a group of about two dozen educators and business leaders, and we talked about this. And we talked about what we need to be doing to make sure that students understand the real world, as Crystal's been talking about, and that they're ready because they started being ready in grade school. I mean, it's an amazing thing to think that all you have to do is sit in a classroom and listen to a teacher, teacher-centered learning, which is the old way of doing things. Now it's student-centered learning, where the student takes some responsibility for their own education along with the teacher.
What's that model they call it? Chalk and talk, I think, right?
That's student-centered learning.
Okay,
a
well,
very different concept, but it's working already in some of our schools.
Well, and Frank, to you, you know, Fred talked earlier about he hears from employers math, 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 but also the soft skills, learning how to present yourself, learning how to show up on time. I have heard all week working on this series, I've heard a lot of people talk about employers want excellent communicators, both spoken and written. So connect the dots for us here, Frank, and maybe you too, Burton. What do they want? I mean, you know, math, but communication. We hear about STEM, but again, the number one thing I've heard this week is communicators.
That's absolutely right. When our criminal justice students go out and do their internships, oftentimes the feedback that we receive is they need to know how to communicate, both written and orally. In other words, it's not the strongest person who's going to make the best law enforcement officer. It's the smartest one. It's the one who can communicate. The other thing I think students need is a passion for their profession. Sometimes students will come in and say, well, where can I make the most money? Well, right now it's in STEM. Science, technology, engineering, and math. Well, if you're not good in math, you're not going to make a good engineer. People will also come and say, well, I want to help people, so I want to go into nursing. But if you don't have a very good science aptitude, you're not going to make a very good nurse. So people have to figure out what their aptitudes are, what do they enjoy, and what are they passionate about, because that's what's going to make the best employee.
Well, and I wonder, there is so much emphasis on STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And if you like that, great, more power to you. Do you think, Frank, that young people are being pushed into that field who maybe should go into, I don't know, nursing or teaching or, God forbid, you know, radio hosting?
Or teaching or, you know, being in college admissions. I don't know if students are completely aware of the opportunities in the STEM field. We hear a lot about it, but it seems that a lot of students are shying away from taking these hard math and science courses. And I think that's what discourages them from considering employment or careers in engineering or computer information systems.
What do you think, Burton?
Well, back on the issue of communication, I agree with what's being said. I think that's one of the most important things that a student can come out of college with. And it's a trend that I've seen change as a student and now as a professor. When I was in undergraduate school, we did not do a lot of oral presentations. That was not part of the curriculum. And it wasn't that long ago.
We did a lot of writing.
We did a ton of writing. Yeah, I was a history major, so I did plenty of writing and a lot of research, and those were great skills. But at Colby Sawyer, for example, students start in their freshman year doing oral presentations. They conclude their senior year with a presentation on their senior research project. And it's woven through all the classes, and we're seeing ways in which they're communicating in that fashion orally. We certainly see the stress in written communication. And another thing I wanted to touch on as well that's part of what we're seeing is that students are learning to communicate. A little bit about what Fred was talking about. Students are learning to communicate with one another, not just back and forth with the professor in that fashion, but we're seeing hybrid classes in which classes are conducted where you meet with your students, you have a physical presence with your students, but then students engage online in discussion forums or in response to blogs, as Crystal mentioned a few minutes ago. And so they're interacting with one another, and a lot of professors are setting up assignments in which it's expected that you will respond to two or more of what your peers are saying. So there's a circular communication with the professor, but also with your peers. And I think in the end, that helps our students both in written communication and in oral communication, which are very crucial soft skills. To Crystal's point, how you present yourself.
All right. Fred, jump in, and then I want to go to our callers.
Real quick. By the year 2020 in New Hampshire, we'll need over 3,000 employees in STEM. And we don't see where they're going to come from, except from out of state.
So if that's the case, what about the communication, Fred? I mean, again, I keep hearing from people, they can't write, they can't communicate. That's the most important thing.
It is.
They'll pick up the STEM sooner or later.
Pick it up sooner or later. If you walk into and I've been with several tech companies in New Hampshire over the last 20 years and helped grow some of them. If a potential employee from college walks in and they have a basic liberal arts education, they can communicate, they can think critically, and they're used to working in teams, they can pick up the STEM expertise within the company, because most companies today train their employees.
Let's go to our listeners, and then I want to ask all of you about what Fred just said. On-site job training. The number here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Post a comment there. Kim's waiting in Concord. Hi, Kim. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Thank you. It was mentioned that employers desire employees with critical thinking skills. What part of this lack of critical thinking skills is developmental, just lack of a brain development or lack of life experience?
So in other words, are they too young to have critical thinking skills? Is that what you're saying, Kim? Or I'm not really sure what your point is.
Yeah, I know that the brain isn't fully developed until maybe the mid-20s, or there's a lack of life experience that coincides with that. And how much of this lack of critical thinking skills is just age?
Okay, yeah, it's a good question. And I think I'm going to throw that to you Burton, actually. Especially given how much we know about the young brain and that it doesn't really mature until, I don't know, 23, 24, 25. She's
25.
Asking a fair question, yeah.
Well, I think it is. But I think, back to Fred's point, I think that this is something that these skill sets, these practices can begin at a very early age. And I know the skill sets that all of our institutions are emphasizing can help reinforce and develop those skill sets. I think a lot of us, I'll speak personally, saw maturation occur as we moved into our 20s. But I was bringing with that skill sets that I had acquired in my undergraduate degree of ways in which I was learning how to think and how to write and how to engage in a breadth of different materials that I was receiving in a wide spectrum of ways.
What do you think, Crystal? You're not an expert on brain development.
I'm not.
But I do
last
wonder about
that's okay.
The maturity levels and sort of, you know, is it fair to ask young people fresh out of college to have critical thinking skills when they really have limited life experience?
When their expectation is that they're going to walk out and make $60,000 in their first job? Yeah, I think there's a certain level of expectation that kind of needs to be put back on the student just a little bit. And I think the research part is where it comes into this. So they have this idea of what they want to do. And, you know, they might come into my office. I had a student the other day who was, you know, I want to be in marketing. Okay, great. Well, you know, who do you want to work for? What are some companies? Couldn't name me a single company that they thought they could work for. So there's a disconnect in the expectation of I should be able to leave here and do X, but they don't understand what connects the dots to them getting there. And so that's, again, a big part of what we help them work on in the Career Center. But the critical thinking piece, it really spans outside of just job skills. It expands to their own search, to their own process, to the way that they're looking at their own future. And I think, you know, there are a lot of great courses on critical thinking and all that kind of stuff. So they're getting the academic piece. But again, the internships, that's going to be really where they have that hands-on experience and maybe first opportunity to put to use the critical thinking skills that they've picked up.
Okay. Well, Kim, it's a good question. Thank you very much. And our number again for you to join us on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Mike is joining us from Londonderry. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I was calling. I'm an adjunct professor at three different New Hampshire colleges. Some of them are private. Some of them are public. I teach online and in the classroom. And the question that I have is some of the schools that I teach at really focus on the technical, hands-on, how to do a particular job. My expertise is criminal justice, so they're focusing on that. Other schools focus on what we were talking about of the critical thinking skills, the problem solving, the philosophical side of what they're doing. What are the the businesses that are looking? Are they looking for that, the critical thinking skills, or do they want the students to come in having the ability to start on the their jobs and have less on-the-job training because they were already prepared to start serving the company?
And, Mike, you said you're an adjunct at a couple different institutions.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think adjuncts bring to the classroom in terms of imparting this career readiness to students?
You know, I think it's critical, and I mean, we've talked about adjuncts on previous shows, but the being a on the job, being in police work, and then being able to go in the classroom and teach them of what I did today and give them real life experience, I think is critical for anything, whether it be business or nursing or any adjunct faculty. The loss is that there's no additional training for adjunct faculty. So sometimes, like I'm working on my education as well as teaching, whereas some adjuncts don't. So
wow,
don't
you're a busy guy, Mike. Well, and adjuncts have come up a lot during this series, and some people criticize, say that, you know, it's not fair, they're underpaid, and so forth. A couple questions about this. I think, too, first, Frank Meyer, since you're at NHTI, he mentions the benefits of an adjunct. He comes in, he's working in the field already, and he's able to say to his students, look, this is what it's really like.
Right, and that's the benefit, I think, of a lot of our instructors at NHTI and throughout the community college system. They have the real-world experience. I think what employers are looking for are people with technical skills and the ability to solve problems. The two go hand in hand. At one time, we used to think, oh, you just need some technical skills. But no, you need to work as a team. It's not the mad scientist working in a lab by himself. It's working as a group to solve a problem. It's not the nurse alone on the floor. She's working as part of a team. So sometimes I think those critical thinking skills are more important than the technical skills, because the technical skills can be gained as the job experience increases. So I think the two go hand in hand, and that's important for colleges to impart to their graduates.
Chris Lekin, so you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I think it leads to a more, I think, exciting topic because, you know, we're sitting here as educators and, you know, and I worked in corporate staffing and recruiting before coming into higher ed career services. And, you know, a perfect example of how we can better lace in the real world pieces into our classrooms. And we do need faculty and professors and everyone to be on board with this and to kind of be on our team with it. But, you know, when you have something crazy like 75% of the small businesses in this state use QuickBooks, and yet our accounting classes are not teaching our students QuickBooks, they leave with that disadvantage because they can't immediately go out and get a job using the one software that everyone uses. So that's, you know, on a smaller scale, that's really what is happening here. So the more adjuncts that we have with experience coming in, the more that we can talk to employers and say, what do you actually need? Whether it's a software, whether it's a skill set, whether it's whatever, what do you actually need? And have them come into the classroom, engage with our students, and really let the students hear it from someone other than us. We're like the parent half the time, you know? So sometimes it's just someone else saying it. But that's, I think, what's going to really make the difference moving forward.
And go ahead, Fred.
And there's something happening in New Hampshire, Crystal and Laura, that is exactly aimed at that. It's called New Hampshire Scholars Program, and it's in 73 out of our 80 high schools. And that program brings businesses into the classrooms in the high schools where business leaders mentor the students about the importance of their education and to be college ready. And then if you're college ready, then you'll be work ready. It's an attempt to take that middle 50%, those that are may or may not go to college. You know, the top 25 will, the bottom 25 will probably go out and work. But that middle 50% who are in play, and say to them, this is important. Be more rigorous in your education right now in high school. In fact, maybe take some college prep courses so you already have some credits as you go into college. You don't want remedial students with remedial courses in the freshman year. So this New Hampshire Scholars Program, which is hugely successful, is trying to get the students to be college ready and to take more rigorous courses in high school, so they are. And it goes to Crystal's point that she just made.
Wow. So more and more, just from talking to you, and I'll ask you this, Burton, I'm getting a sense from all of you that the time to start thinking about career ready is even before college or in those first early, early years of college. But Burton, boy, a lot of people at age 17, 16, 18, 19 don't know what they want to do.
Well, they don't. And I have a 7-year-old who frequently asks me, Dad, what are you going to do when you grow up? And it's actually been a great question for me to think about professionally, but also to think about where my students are that I meet, because we start to engage them, as Crystal pointed out, at Colby Sawyer. Our students are being introduced to the Career Development Office. They're being introduced to our adjuncts who work in different fields, from nursing to the business community, to the lawyers who teach in our law program, of the different skill sets that they're going to need when they move into college and afterwards. And so while I understand that many don't know what they're going to do, and I honestly think some are going to disagree with me on this, I think that's a perfectly good answer, that they don't know. It's and I know this will spark some debate, but I think college and this, back to the question that Kim called in on, you know, people are learning what they want to do, and it's college's responsibilities to help guide them in ways in which they can acquire the skill sets and start answering some questions on what directions they want to go. And I think that's going to be a question that students are going to be asking for a long time, and people who go into the field. I mean, the evidence that we're hearing from the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Chronicle Hour of Education, we're training students right now for which we do not know what the jobs will be in 10 to 20 years. Fred might be able to talk about this more accurately than I can, but we know that while there are going to be a shortage in STEM jobs, there are going to be jobs for which our students who are going to graduate, we graduate this coming May, May 10th, this Saturday, and our students in 20 or 30 years are going to be in a workforce that is going to be quite a bit different.
Unimaginable
than it is.
From
well,
where
I think
we're
that's the right
now.
That
right.
is the right word. It, perhaps unimaginable.
So the education is, Burton, not necessarily here's skill A, here's skill B, but making you a good thinker, a critical thinker, since we keep talking about that, having sort of that broad ability to look at a situation, figure it out, work with other people. It's the big stuff. It's not skill A, skill B.
Well, I agree with that.
And that's what you're saying, then.
I do. I think it's our responsibility, and back to Fred's point, we need to do this early in high school and to continue it in college to prep students for those skills.
All right. A lot more conversation in just a moment. More on what it means to be career ready and how higher education is playing into that. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Back in a moment.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the latest on efforts to rescue nearly 300 Nigerian schoolgirls. Then a portrait of India's capital city, Delhi, and its economic transformation, all coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show is 20 minutes away here on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from the law firm of Donahue, Tucker, and Shondella, offering legal representation to New Hampshire businesses, individuals, and municipalities, online at dtclawyers.com. And from Wright Networks, delivering familiar business applications to companies of all sizes, moving your organization into the cloud easily, reliably, and securely. WrightNetworks.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Today in The Exchange, we're wrapping up our series on higher education, a matter of degrees, with what it means to be career ready. Join us with your thoughts on that question. Call in 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at NHPR. Email is exchange at NHPR.org. Or you can find us on Twitter at NHPR. Exchange. And all of you, let's go back to our callers. And Sherry's waiting in Concord. Hi, Sherry. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Laura. I'm kind of wondering, one of your guests said, and I've heard it many other places, that employers really, really want people who can communicate well, who can write, who can deliver what speeches and presentations, who can think critically. I'm an English major, three times over. Those are my main skills. I don't have a lot of talent in STEM, but I have loads of office skills. I'm actually one of your front desk volunteers, so you know I can answer phones and stuff. But I mean, I'm a fantastic typist. I'm a great word processor. there's all kinds of things that I can do. And on some temp jobs, when they've trained me in industry-specific software, I pick it right up. But my resume is not getting me anywhere. They don't. They say they want communication, but what they really want is a degree in something else, and also they can write.
Yeah, you know? So they want everything. It sounds like you're saying, Sherry's very frustrating. Fred, what do you think?
College is a lifetime investment. I mean, you just I went to college for one thing, and I'm doing another. I majored in one thing, and I'm not doing that. It's a lifetime investment, and landing a job unrelated or related to your major is probably not going to happen. So you really go into the job market with your eyes wide open, looking for opportunities anywhere at the beginning. The typical young person today is probably going to have 5 to 10 jobs, different types of jobs in their lifetime.
At least, yeah.
At least. So, you know, it's that investment in education which prepares you for anything. I have a grandson that just born last year, and I'm looking at him, Connor, his name is, and I'm saying to myself, the world he inherits when he's ready to go into the job market will be nothing like I'm looking at today.
Kind of like
technology will be
earlier.
Different,
yeah.
The expectations will be different, and they just have to be generally prepared for anything that they run into when they leave college.
Okay, but here's Sherry's frustration, and I hear her. She's saying employers say they want communications. She says, you know, I'm a great communicator, orally, written, but she's still having a tough time because she doesn't have that sort of harder skill, if I could put it that way.
Right.
So it's frustrating.
The big emphasis is on STEM right now, as we all know. But she is needed. We need people at the front desk, but we also need them behind the scenes without the technical skills, but with the ability to communicate. In companies that I have worked with, there are people behind the scenes in the HR department, for instance, that actually work with those on the manufacturing floor to help them communicate to their fellow employees. So there are in-house training sessions where people without the STEM skills get together with those that have them, and they talk about how they can move this company forward together. So there's a role for this lady that just called in. There's a role for her. She's just got to find it.
Sherry, good luck to you. Frank, I can see you want to hop in there.
Well, we have many students who have a degree in one area and then enroll in NHTI to beef up their skills to make them more marketable. We're running a program right now called Work Ready, and it's for people who are unemployed or underemployed. And some of these people have master's degrees. We've put 58 people through this program over the last several months. And we teach them some basic skills in communications, in computers, how to do a proper resume.
So they've got master's degrees, they lost their jobs,
exactly.
Maybe in the recession, and they can't
exactly.
Get back in.
And the one thing that this program gives them is confidence to get back out there with their skills to get a job. We also have some programs in manufacturing. Manufacturing is the chief engine in the New Hampshire economy. We think it's tourism.
Or healthcare,
but it's really manufacturing. We have this program in applied manufacturing processes, which takes a student, gives him or her some basic skills. They can advance to a more sophisticated certificate program, and then they can actually go into an associate degree program. This is what we now call stacking. So all these courses at the basic level can actually be put toward an associate degree.
Associate degree is a typical 2-year degree from
correct.
A community college.
So that does two things. Number one, it gives the students some marketable skills. And secondly, inspires them to continue with their education.
Here's a question then, and I can tell you want to jump in too, Burton. Here's a question that I'll throw to you first, Frank. So let's say I go into your program for applied manufacturing. Maybe I want to stack, as you say, and continue my education a little bit more. If I'm getting that very specific degree in applied manufacturing, do I need to take an English course? Do I need to take a history course? Do I need to take a civics course so that I'm a well-rounded, educated citizen? Courses are expensive. I'm busy. Maybe I don't want to spend the time and money taking English.
In the associate degree program, you do.
I do have to take.
You do have to take.
Certain requirements.
Two Englishes, one of which is English comp. Another one is communication, a social science, a humanities. So even at the associate degree level, which typically would take 2 to 3 years, you still get that well-rounded education.
And how do students feel about that? Because the courses are expensive.
They are expensive, although the community college system in New Hampshire has lowered
its
tuition.
Quite famously. But I do wonder, you know, look, if I just want to get this very practical degree and move on with my life, and let's say I have two kids and, you know, I'm busy, I really don't want to take a humanities course.
I think a lot of students probably enter the courses kicking and screaming, and then once they get in there, realize, gee, this is really interesting. I am learning something that can be applied to the real world.
Go ahead, Burton, please.
Well, following up on Frank's point, and one of the things that we've seen at Colby-Sawyer just in the last 18 months or less is that we've created three online certificate programs for human resources, for leadership, that the business community is telling us are skills that we can develop at Colby-Sawyer. We also have a coaching certificate for people who are teachers who want to get that certification so they can take on coaching responsibilities in the secondary schools. The other thing we've seen just in the last really almost 6 months is the RN to BS program at Colby-Sawyer for people who are practicing registered nurses, but in order to advance at Dartmouth-Hitchcock, for example, they can come to Colby-Sawyer. It's online while they're still working, and engage in the acquisition of a Bachelor of Science degree, which will help them advance in their already established career as a nurse, but it'll provide some of those both science and soft skill development that will allow them the opportunity to expand their opportunities at any of the hospitals or doctor's offices around the state.
So let me ask you the same question that I just asked Frank. So let's say I'm getting that advanced nursing degree at Colby-Sawyer. You know, do I need to take Western Civilization? Because, again, it's expensive. It costs time. Takes me away from time on the hospital floor. You know, it may be interesting to learn about the French Revolution, but does that really help me get a job as a nurse?
Well, you're asking a historian. yes, and I'm saying that not as a historian, and I'm saying that because of all that we've alluded to before of the skills that occur in that type of course, of oral presentations, of the research, the writing that takes place, the engagement of a breadth of different literature. But one quick example, the National Association of Athletic Trainers is examining the issue of whether or not they want to have their programs move to a 5-year master's level prepared program. But one of the things that their national report has indicated is that they want students to have the soft skills in reading, in writing, in critical thinking that can occur in the humanities so they can be more effective as athletic trainers using the skills that an athletic trainer would need, but to bring, if you will, the gravitas to evaluating what they're dealing with someone who comes in with any number of potential injuries.
That's interesting. So Western civilization may seem sort of loosey-goosey, why am I studying this? But there's actually real skills that would help someone in that workforce.
Yes.
I can see you want to jump in too, Fred. Go ahead.
Yeah, going back to the lady that called in, and she's looking for a job, obviously, that could be more permanent. Not to take her away from you here. But Granite State College, I'm on the advisory board. Granite State College, in addition to the community college system, is the best buy for education in New Hampshire. I sit at their graduations, which is about to come up, and I watch 90% of the graduates are people who have already got jobs in New Hampshire. They're adults, some with babies as they walk across the stage to get their diploma. That is the workforce that we already have. And people are going back to school because they can afford it at Granite State College, and they're going back to school to improve themselves and then make themselves more marketable.
So there are other options
it's
besides
a huge opportunity.
That traditional 4 years,
just
four-year degree.
As we were talking a few minutes ago about the community college system, those are the two places in New Hampshire where you can go get a good education to improve yourself for a reasonable cost.
All right. Let's go back to our listeners. And Emily's waiting in Hanover. Hi, Emily. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I am a graduate student at Dartmouth in the business school, and the CEO of eBay came and spoke last week about this very topic, and his point of view was students aren't majoring in STEM because it's harder. You know, it's easier to go into, let's say, an art history major and come out of school with an A average than it is to go into, you know, computer science and come out of school with an A average. And his point was, that's great for your short-term GPA to put on your resume, but 15 years down the line, the, you know, computer science majors are going to be doing far better than, on average, the art history majors, and that kids really need to just get over the it's hard factor. Yeah, it's hard, but life is hard, and it's like kind of a short-term investment for a long-term payoff. And
so, Emily, you think we should be looking more at students?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it's more, it's less of the curriculum and the teaching methodology, and it's more of the students these days are just less motivated, and they kind of want the easy way out.
Emily, thanks a lot for the call. Okay, Crystal, go ahead.
I think she hit it right on the head. There are a lot of parents that try to step in and say, hey, my kid can do whatever they want. And, you know, ever since kids are small, it's like, hey, what do you want to be? You can be anything you want. And I think we need to have a little bit more sobering conversations with our kids. And this is kind of where, you know, when Fred and Frank and everyone have been talking about starting this process in grade school, I think it really starts at home as well, because, you know, parents have to really start allowing their kids to grow a little bit of a thicker skin and learn how to deal with rejection and learn how to, okay, I applied to the engineering school. I didn't get in my first time, but this is what I want to do, and this is going to be my best long-term option. Like Emily's saying, they have to be okay to push themselves. And some of these kids just, you have one hard conversation with them and they crumble, and you're spending the rest of your semester trying to just build them back up, you know, like Frank was saying, to a confidence level that will even be appropriate for them to apply for jobs. I hear horror stories of parents literally trying to walk students into interviews. I mean, we call them helicopter parents, you know, because they just hover and they don't leave the kid alone. This is the reality, though. People might be laughing when I say that. This is happening. So I think a lot of this it needs to be talked about at home. We have to be preparing our kids to be, okay, well, what if you don't, you know, get back on the horse? You know, but it's not like, oh, well, if you fall off the horse, don't worry, I'll go hit the horse and then I'll drag it back over and you can jump on board and, you know, and then I'll walk the horse for you. It's like we really need to get away from that.
So you agree with Emily, in addition to, you know, talking about what employers want and what schools could do more of and opportunities and internships, Emily's point is, you know, kids need to suck it up and work hard.
We're all on the same team. We are all on the same team with this. If this is our long-term goal, is to improve employment opportunities for our college grads and, you know, improving the economy of New Hampshire, we are all on the same team, and parents definitely have to do their part as well.
Well, Emily, thanks a lot for the call. And here's an email that brings up the role of employers, which we've talked about some, but not quite enough perhaps. So here's Amelia. She says, I went to a traditional college, received a five-year Bachelor of Architecture degree. All professional architects are required to go through a documented internship period of about 3 years after college. Firms and architects understand that this is part of their responsibility to give interns experience in a broad range of areas. She says, do the STEM fields not have this type of setup? It does seem that the STEM professionals should expect to have to train their young employees to some extent. Also sounds like Fred Coker, what law firms have often done.
Right.
There's always that summer internship. It's expected. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, do you want to talk about that as well? She seems to be saying, look, you know, employers maybe need to work with these folks a little bit more. Go ahead, Fred, and also to you, Frank.
And they do. I mean, Dynamic Network Services in Manchester, DYNE, as we now call it, they do that exact thing. They train their employees when they make sure they have the basic skills that they need for the jobs they're trying to fill, and that they have, and they can sense that they have the critical thinking skills and so forth, and the communication skills. But once they get inside those four walls of DYNE, there's more training that goes on, and that's becoming more typical in companies across the country.
Although what I do hear from some companies on the other side, Fred, is, look, young people move so quickly from job to job, why should I make the investment? And that's easy to understand.
That's true. You have to gauge that, and that's the HR function.
Yeah.
However, DYNE is now in the process of working with Manchester West High School and with a community college in Manchester in a program that will literally create pathways for students from the local schools into college, into business in Manchester. Businesses and schools need each other in this time in which we live.
Frank, go ahead.
In all of our STEM programs, there are internships. In information technology, they'll actually go out in many of the businesses and state agencies here in Concord and do a semester's work. And that's really like a job interview. The employer can assess the skills of our students. And that oftentimes turns into a job. Same thing in a program like dental assisting. They spend one semester in a dental office. And oftentimes that leads to full employment.
Burton, I want to just close out with you. As we look at this idea of career readiness, what more could employers do in terms of things Fred and Frank talked about? What more could students do in terms of what Crystal talked about? We've all talked about what more higher education could do. Just fold this up for us, if you could, please, Burton. What it's going to take to sort of make people more career ready?
Well, I think it's going to be a combination of all that we've been talking about this morning. I mean, one of the things that I've observed in the last 10 years of my career is the relationship between colleges and employers through internships. But if you look at the LEAP report, Liberal Education America's Promises report, that came out of cooperation and discussion with academics and with the business community as to what we need to do to move America forward. And that came out in 2008. And that's really the foundation for a lot of what we're seeing in this new era of education between businesses and education.
All right. All of you, thank you very much for being here. Crystal, good to see you. Thank you. Crystal Hicks, Associate Director at the UNH Career Center. Fred Coker, always a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Nice to be here, Laura.
Fred Coker, Trustee of the High Tech Council, co-founder of the New Hampshire Coalition for Business and Education. Burton Kirkwood, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Burton Kirkwood, Academic Dean at Colby Sawyer College. And Frank Meyer, nice to meet you. Thank you, Laura. Frank Meyer, longtime Director of Admissions at NHTI Concord's Community College. As part of our series this week, we're asking a question every day. We'd like to hear from you on this question. For today, it's, is higher education's focus on STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, devaluing the traditional liberal arts education? You can respond on Facebook at NH Public Radio or by sending an email to comments at nhpr.org. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Several more prominent state politicians announce they won't seek another term. The Federal Department of Energy reviews 24 alternatives for the Northern Pass hydropower project. And gambling supporters take one final roll of the dice for casinos in the state, but lose their bid. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show is next at 10 o'clock here on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from Tully BMW of Nashua, now registering drivers for their all-electric BMW i3 test drive event next Wednesday, May 14th. Details at TullyEvents.com. And from Jensen Communities, with 6 locations in New Hampshire, including the new Brook Ridge community in Hooksett, one-floor living in safe, friendly neighborhoods. JensenCommunities.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Outrage over the abduction of nearly 300 Nigerian schoolgirls by an Islamic rebel group has exploded worldwide. What began with small street protests by distraught parents and activists has been amplified with the help of social networks. More than